Today, I'm continuing in my series in the life of David. And last week, David entered into the wilderness experience. And there are 15 separate stories now coming in these chapters about the different experiences of David in the wilderness. And the one that we're going to look at today has to do with him and his men being in a cave in the wilderness of En Gedi. The big takeaway for today is this idea that in this wilderness university that David finds himself in, and that we sometimes find ourselves in, is that we are not to do in our own strength and in our own time what God has promised that he'll do in his strength and in his time. So we're going to look at Wilderness University, the classroom experience, and the test. Wilderness University, the classroom, and the test. So let's stand as we read from the scriptures the story from 1 Samuel 24. Give your full attention to this word of the Lord. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 able young men from all of Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed one, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul, "My lord the king!" When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. And he said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say, 'David is bent on harming you'? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Now some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, 'I will not lay my hand on my Lord, because he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut it off. I cut off the corner of your robe, but I did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion against you. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs that you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds. So my hand will not touch you. Against whom has the king of Israel come out? Who are you pursuing? A dead dog? A flea? May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand." When David finished saying all of these things, Saul asked, "Is that your voice, David, my son?" And he wept aloud. "You are more righteous than I," he said. "You have treated me well, but I have treated you badly. You have just now told me about the good that you did to me. The Lord delivered me into your hands, but you did not kill me. When a man finds his enemy, does he let him get away unharmed? May the Lord reward you. May he reward you well for the way that you have treated me today. I know that you will surely be king and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands. Now swear to me by the Lord that you will not kill off my descendants or wipe out my name from my father's family. So David took his oath to Saul. And then Saul returned home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Please be seated. So David has just enrolled in Wilderness University. And the classroom here is a cave. And the test is he going to take matters into his own hand? Or is he going to trust the Lord? Let's talk a little bit about Wilderness University. None of us knows exactly when Wilderness University will be thrust upon us. None of us know the day of our enrollment. I'll tell you a quick story. Monday was a beautiful day, a day for yard work. So I decided I was going to do some yard work. Well, you know, I think I'm stronger in my head than I'm actually in my body. And I was going to pull out a sapling, roots and all. Well, instead of pulling it out, I pulled a muscle in my back. And this entire week, I have been in pain that I have to say that I have not experienced in a very, very long time in my life. Some of you probably know that pain, maybe a lot worse pain than that. But here I am on Sunday, and I've lost a lot of sleep the last nights. Just can't quite find myself in a comfortable position. And hey, it's not all a bad thing to find yourself awake at night because you can't sleep, because it gets your mind on other things, maybe things that the Lord is keeping you awake for so that you can pray for others. The thing is, we get enrolled in Wilderness University. We don't know when it's going to happen, and we don't know how long the courses are. This could be graduate level stuff that God is enrolling you in. The fact is David is just at the very beginning of his Wilderness University enrollment, and he's got many years. Why does he have many years? Well, because he has many lessons to learn. God is in charge of the curriculum, and God is in charge of the classroom. We don't get to decide that. Think about this for a moment. Look at the setup of this story. David is hiding from Saul. He's hiding for his life. And he's gathered around him a certain group of men. We don't know exactly how big this group is yet. Soon it will grow, and we're given numbers. But at this exact point, it's probably just a small group of people. And David, he's looking for food and looking for water. And Saul has spies in the land. Of course, this is Saul's kingdom. So he has eyes all over the place. So Saul hears that David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Now, En-Gedi means spring of the goat or spring of the young kid. Okay? And it's an interesting place. It's a beautiful place, smack dab in a very hot and dry desert along the shoreline of the Dead Sea. There's this beautiful spring, and it wells out of the ground at some place, and this water just gushing out. And everywhere it goes, it creates this very beautiful and verdant little valley. In fact, in those days, we're told that they would take the water that would come out, and instead of letting it just rush into the Dead Sea, in that salty sea, people would take that water, and they would grow vineyards in that area. Beautiful, hot, sunny. The soil isn't much to speak of, but any of you gardeners know that if you've got sunshine and you've got lots of water, you can grow stuff in sand. Okay? To this day, there is actually a kibbutz called En-Gedi right near there, and that kibbutz siphons all the water that comes out of that spring, and they've created a lush and verdant farm called the kibbutz of En-Gedi. I've had the privilege of actually visiting that place a couple of times in my life. Okay, so this is where David and his men are hiding in those caves. He's going through the university, the wilderness university, and he's getting ready for a classroom experience. The classroom is the cave. He and his men are hiding in the cave, and it just so happens that Saul, with his 3,000 strong men, decides that he needs to relieve himself. So he goes into the cave, and presumably he takes off his robe, throws it to the side, probably gets far enough back into the cave so, you know, nobody outside can see him. You wonder to yourself, how does David know that that is King Saul? Isn't it very dark in there? Because you can imagine this scenario. Those guys are hiding in the very back of the cave, and Saul walks in there, and he's just come out of the brilliant sunshine, and you know what it's like. Your pupils are, you know, trying to adjust to the light. You can't see anything in the cave. It's pitch black. But the people that are in the cave, their eyes are well adjusted to the situation. So now you see this man who the scripture says stood a head taller than any Israelite coming into the cave, and he's got his kingly robes. David knows that this is Saul. David knows for a couple of reasons. One, because he sees how tall this guy is. He sees that he's got these kingly robes that he's throwing to his side. But also, David knows Saul very, very, very well. How many times has David been in the inner chamber of the king and played on the harp and sang his songs? He knows the figure that Saul cuts in the shadow and in the sunshine, the shape of his head, the shape of his beard. And David and his men, they know that this is Saul. So here's the test. It's being set up in this classroom. And it's almost like some sort of vaudevillian farce because, you know, Saul is coming in. He's the king, and he's going to sit on his throne for a few minutes and do his thing. And all those guys are in the back. And they're saying, now's your chance. You can do it. Here's an interesting thing. David evidently, according to the scriptures, has been told, the Lord will deliver your enemy into your hands. Have you ever had somebody speak a prophetic word over you? They just lay hands on you and they speak something. And you just know in your heart, yeah, that's the truth. I'm going to receive that truth, okay? I've had that happen to me, and it's a beautiful thing. But I'm often reminded of that, where the Lord has promised something or spoke something. He will do it in His time and in His way. You know, if I try to craft the circumstances in such a way that I grab things that He's promised to me, it's almost always premature and not a good thing. God makes those promises to us. He makes them through His Word. He speaks those words through other people in our community. And we don't put confidence in the Word. We put confidence in the Lord. You get the difference? Okay? There's a promise there, but you don't put your confidence in the promise. You put your confidence in the promise giver, always entrusting yourself to the Lord. And so all of his men are saying, this is your chance. Remember, it's been said many times, the Lord is going to deliver your enemy. All David has to do is kill Saul, and the gig is up. His wilderness journeys are over. You take the king out, and then you claim the kingship. David knows that a promise has been spoken over him. Remember, Samuel came and anointed him just when he was a young lad? And Jewish tradition tells us that Samuel whispered in his ear the significance of the anointing. You're going to be king one day. So he knew that that was a promise. So here's the test. It's all laid out. Shall I do it now? Or am I going to wait? Well, David is a man of honor. I mean, who wants to take out your enemy in that kind of a way? Sitting there in a vulnerable and prone position. That's not even an honorable way, probably by taking your big sword and stabbing the guy in the back. That's not the way it should be. You know, there are things that are going on here that are important for us to remember. David does not kill Saul for at least three reasons in that moment. One, he's never had it in his heart to kill Saul. David has never had it in his heart to kill Saul. Saul's the one who's messed up and thinks that David wants to kill him. You know, doing this in this moment is just proving Saul's point. No, David's heart is in a good place. His intention isn't to steal the kingship. It's not to kill Saul. David has loved Saul. David has loved Saul's family. David has served Saul loyally and honorably. It's Saul's craziness that imagines that David is out to get him. So that, number one, David has no intention to kill Saul. It just wasn't in his head to do that. Number two, remember that Saul is the king, and you reap what you sow. Are you tracking with me here? Let me explain that. Saul's the king. If he, as some rebel, goes and kills the king, you know how they say sometimes, don't listen to what I say, but watch what I do? He's giving a terrible example for himself. What that means is anybody that wants to rebel against the king, all you have to do is thrust a knife in his back. So you're going to reap what you sow. So what he's sowing here is honor for the Lord's anointed. Honoring the Lord's anointed. And the third thing is, and I made this point already, is like, don't take for yourself in your own strength in your own time what the Lord wants to give you in his strength and at his time. The Bible is full of stories of people who've received promises, and they decided to take matters into their own hands. The first one that comes to my mind is Abram and Sarah. God promised that there would be a child of promise that would come, but Sarah's like, well, I'm pretty old. I don't think I'm ever going to have any kids. The promise came, and, you know, I still haven't been able to deliver. So here, let's cook up a plan. You can take Hagar. How did that work out? That was a bad idea from the start. There's just a specific example of when God makes a promise and you take into your own hands the timing and the strength of that, you're not going to get blessing out of that. You're going to create problems for yourself. So it's really important that we understand that David is trusting the Lord in this moment. And this is kind of tough because the people around him are saying, do it. How many times have you had in your own life where you know that God is opening a door of opportunity in a specific way, but the timing just doesn't seem right, but somebody says to you, yeah, go for it. Don't you see? This is it. This is it. This is where it's really important, and I'm not saying disregard the counsel of people in your life, but at the end of the day, it's your conscience. It's the still small voice of the Spirit in your life that is going to be the thing that makes all the difference. If all these people saying, come on, David, here's your opportunity, do it. And yet in his heart, he knows the timing isn't right. It's not right for me to do this. And I think that we have to ask that same question in our own life. I don't know exactly what kind of wilderness university that you're going through in your life right now, or the particular classroom situation, or the curriculum that the Lord is teaching you. Perhaps you're in a situation where there is somebody who is after you like an adversary or an enemy, and they are the bane of your existence, and you would love for nothing more and that person would be removed. And yet the Lord is not removing that person. And I want to encourage you to trust the Lord, that He has a purpose for you. Let me tell you a little story. You know, I've been a pastor for a number of years, and I was in a previous congregation, and there was a gentleman there, a guy actually my age, and for some reason, he kind of took a disliking to me. And he listened to some things that somebody else had said and believed that. And pretty soon it got to a point where I would come to church and he wouldn't even look at me. That's pretty hard. That's tough. And, you know, I was struggling with that. Things got to a point where, you know, it was strained. And then this person's mom passed away. She was an older lady. And I was able to go to the funeral and, you know, give my condolences. But not long after that, Mother's Day came up. And the Holy Spirit spoke in my heart as I was at Ingalls. And I felt like the Spirit was saying, remember the favorite flower of that guy's mom? It was a hibiscus. And I think that you should reach out to him. So I bought a beautiful hibiscus, and I brought it to this guy's house the day before Mother's Day with a note. And I said, I met him at the door, and I said, you know, I just want to, again, say how sorry that I am that you lost your mom, such an amazing and special person. And I knew that hibiscus was her favorite flower, so I just wanted to give this to you. And it was so beautiful because it was like a dam burst in that moment. And if you're operating in the flesh, then you're not going to do nice things for other people. You're going to stand in your rights, so to speak. But when you're operating in the Spirit, you're listening to the still small voice of the Spirit, and you're doing things that are maybe counter to your nature, but they're the things that God wants you to do. And that's just a small example in my own life from a number of years ago where just listening to the still small voice of the Spirit was able to create an open place in that relationship. So I just want to encourage you, never mind what other people say or, you know, even what your flesh is saying, but listen to the still small voice of the Spirit. The challenges that we face in our lives, in our work, maybe you're in a job that you're not really enjoying, or in a place in life that you're not really feeling fulfilled, but God's not giving you the freedom or the release from that place. That's a wilderness time. That's wilderness university. But trust in Him that He will accomplish what it is that He wants to do in your life. Okay? David's wilderness university, years and years and years. Why? Because God was setting him up to be the king of Israel, a shadow, so to speak, of the coming anointed one, Jesus Christ. And he had a lot of things to learn in his life. And I would dare say that we have those same things that we need to learn in our lives. This past week, our son Matthew gave us a call. On Friday, he said, Dad, I just got laid off from my job. And we had been so excited for him because he graduated in May from state as a biomedical engineer. And he had different job opportunities, but decided to take this one job with a startup company called UConn. And they were just going gangbusters. And he was very excited about being on that team. And we, of course, were very excited for him. But evidently, some things went south with this startup, and they got overextended, and they had to let go a third of their employees. And Matt was one of the last guys in, so what do they say? Last in, first out. And I said, Matt, how are you taking this? Because that's kind of a wilderness university experience for him. And he said, yeah, Dad, it's tough. It's hard. I said, don't just jump at the first job offer that you get. God is this setback is a setup for you for something. And he said, yeah, Dad, I received that counsel, and I feel like this is an opportunity for me to get more invested in my church. He and his wife go to Christ the King Presbyterian Church in Raleigh, and also to invest in a few key friendships. He's got at least one friend that's in a very, very difficult place, and he sees the Lord speaking into his life to spend a little extra time with this friend. Do you want to be a Christian? And I'm not talking about the kind that just shows up on church on Sunday or has a fish attached to their bumper. You want to be a real Christ follower, listen to the voice of the Spirit and cooperate with the testing that he's putting you through as you go through the wilderness university. Because God has begun a beautiful work in you. And he who began a good work, he is the one that will be faithful to complete it in you. We don't need to take the reins. We don't need to take the steering wheel. We truly can trust in the Lord that he is the one who has started it, and he is the one who will be faithful to bring it to completion.